Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
It's just another night, just another fight for my life. It's alright because everything dies, nobody know why. What did I go do? What you go do when you're feeling like you're falling and you can't find nothing to hold on to?
Memories carry me. That is Alone by Burna Boy, part of the very, very satisfying soundtrack of the Black Panther Wakanda Forever. We're going to be talking about that today on the nose. We'll also be talking about Poker Face, but let me tell you who's on the nose right now. Sean Murray is a stand-up comedian, writer, and the host of the podcast We Must Kill the Fish Man. No, that is not what his podcast is called. It's called Nobody Asked Sean, S-H-A-W-N is how you spell Sean. Helder Mira is the only white man who is trusted with Vibranian. He's also a multimedia producer at Trinity College, the co-host of the So Pretentious podcast with Vivian Nebeta and Tracy Wu Fastenberg, who recently returned from the Upper East Side where she had that very expensive surgery to remove the wings from her ankles. And now she's thinking, why did I do that? A development officer at Connecticut Children's, and that is our panel today. We are indeed going to talk about first Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Let's hear a clip from the movie. You are going to hear, and I hope I am going to say his name right, although I should get the last name correctly, Tenoch Huerta Mejia as Namor, he of the winged ankles. Angela Bassett as Ramonda, the queen of Wakanda, and Letitia Wright as Shuri, the brainy scientific sister of T'Challa, and many other things besides. Here we go.
The American military detected Vibranium under my nation's domain. I was able to stop them from mining it, but we need Wakanda's help to prevent it from happening again. They use a machine designed by an American scientist.
Vibranium only exists here, in Wakanda.
Mother, he's covered in it.
Your son exposed the power of Vibranium to the world. In response, other nations have begun searching the planet for it. His choice has compromised us. I think Wakanda could find the scientists and bring them to me. It is only fair that Wakanda helps to resolve our dilemma.
You do not sneak into my country and tell me what is fair.
I have more soldiers than this land has blades of grass. And they have incomparable strength. I would hate to come back under different circumstances.
It's probably going to come up, but this entire conversation takes place in pitch darkness. It's like really hard to see anybody. Very near the beginning of the movie. All right. So obviously this is the first full sequel to the original Black Panther movie. It takes place obviously without Chadwick Boseman, who died so tragically in between the movies. So this movie deals, I think, pretty extensively with grief. They basically have made T'Challa's death and Boseman's death kind of the same thing in a way. It's also the other thing that you probably need to know, and I probably should have said it before we played the clip, is so vibranium is this metal, this thing that has unbelievable properties that have allowed Wakanda to develop this very, very advanced civilization. And they have been under the impression that they're the only ones who have any of it. It turns out this is right at the beginning of the movie. I'm not wrecking anything. There's somebody else who has it. And nobody knew. All right. So, Sean Murray, I'm going to have you get us started. I know you've seen this once in a movie theater with a 9-year-old companion and perhaps more times since then. So give us your first, second, and third impressions.
Okay. First impression, they should just make no more movies from now on. Like, like they should just stop like all the other MCU garbage and just do movies about Namor. He's the most compelling screen presence they've had in years. Like, it's just like, it's not even close. Like, he's, I mean, Angela Bassett was great in the movie in terms of like an acting performance, but in terms of like a new character, like with like verve and just energy, like you just want to see him in every scene of the movie. And I think this kind of leads into my second thought, which is like, it's just such a shame that Chadwick Boseman passed away. Obviously, not just for the movie's purposes, but because we're speaking about the movie, I gotta address it in that way. I would love to see them like sort of face to face and like facing off throughout the movie, because like that's a huge plot point in the comics, is like Namor invading Wakanda. And I just feel like that's what the movie is missing more than anything. It's like they did the best they could without him being there, but like you could feel his absence, even though I think it was like a valiant effort. I think the movie is ultimately pretty good. I think he's just missed, and I just I can't remember my third thought was, but those are two pretty good ones, huh?
Yeah, those are two very good thoughts. We will take two really good thoughts or three average thoughts, either way. And so you certainly have fulfilled your requirements. So Tracy Wu Fastenberg, you know, one of the questions that always arises from a movie like this, a movie that has, I think, some, you know, emotional and artistic meat on its bones, but it's also very dependent on a comic book source to a certain degree. I think I know this is general level of comic book involvement of the other two panelists. It's high. My guess would be that you weren't necessarily familiar with Namor butting heads with the Fantastic Four and whatever thoughts he might have had about Sue Storm.
What?
Yeah.
Who?
That would have been my guess.
Yeah. So, yes, I am not immersed in comic books the same way that others are. So I come to these movies pretty much green for a lot of it, having seen a handful, not everyone in the right sequential order or whatnot. But I really enjoyed this. I think that it worked for me, not knowing all of the backstories and plots and the way it's supposed to go in the comic books. I think they balanced mourning and a new storyline really well, although I think it took a little bit to get there for me. At first, I was like, this is going slow and I'm feeling super sad here. But at the same time, they made me feel sad, right? I felt everything that they were feeling. The performances of the female cast at the beginning in particular were excellent. And then once it got going with the rest of the storyline itself, I was engaged. I thought it was a lot of fun. I liked Namor. I actually will mention that I really appreciated the fact that even though he seemed to not have much clothing on for a lot of the time, they didn't make that some sort of central part where they were highlighting it a lot, where they did possibly with, oh, I don't know, Aquaman or other superhero, brawny, strong character type of things. And I think they did a good job of making it part of his costume without making it some sort of, you know, trashy hook or something. So I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I do want to say, obviously, there's a very, there's a literally funereal quality to this movie. I mean, it begins with this really, really beautiful and striking funeral for T'Challa. And there is, you know, kind of a gloom that sits over the movie a lot. But, you know, Tracy, I do also think that they, you know, right away they committed also to making it entertaining. I mean, well, one thing that I noticed was they had a pretty funny joke and damn near a breaking of the fourth wall joke early on in the movie. I don't know if you picked this up, but so it turns out that there's somebody at Harvard they have to track down. And so two of the characters, Shuri, and I forget the name of Danny Guerrero's character. Oye?
Okoye.
Okay, so they go to Harvard, and they're kind of in, you know, they're in sort of civilian dress. They're not dressed real Wakandan, and they're both have these really cool sunglasses on and stuff. And at one point, Okoye starts to worry that she doesn't look right, and she says, "Is my color wrong?" And Shuri says, "No, it's Fenty 440. It looks great on you." And now Fenty 440 is, among other things, a Rihanna endorsed makeup product, and Rihanna, of course, has the Oscar nominated song off of this movie. And I mean, that's a pretty funny joke. and in a way, because Wakanda is so encapsulated, to have a joke like that in a way is sort of saying, well, yeah, okay, we're not going to take ourselves 100% seriously.
Yes, and I actually did catch that one because I do really enjoy her products. So.
All right.
I may be the only one on this panel that's really, you know, into that.
I'm very proud of myself for figuring out what that was.
I am too. I'm impressed.
I didn't have any help. So, but you know, Helder, this is... You know, we're sort of exploring one of the tensions of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. By the way, this is the last movie in Phase 4. Phase 5 is about to begin in February with the new Ant-Man movie. I don't know what you're supposed to do with that information. Nothing would be my advice. But there's a way in which it has to do two different things, right? There has to be sort of fan service. People like you who spent, you know, a fair amount of time with these comic books and have very specific ideas about, you know, what Namor is going to be like or any question like that. That group of people cannot be discounted. But they want to make a movie that Tracy can watch and not sort of feel like, oh, Jesus, I didn't read up enough. And maybe talk a little bit about how that worked for you. Particularly, maybe, were there things that you wanted to see in this iteration that you got to see?
For me, I got to admit, it was a pretty spot on, great introduction for Namor and Namor. I guess that's how they're pronouncing it in the movie. I think most of us always pronounce it Namor. Mm. But, I mean, to Tracy's point, like, with his outfit and his costume, like, I said in the emails, like, the fact that we got a comic-accurate rendition of him down to, like, little wings on his feet, which, you know, was always the biggest joke about the idea of actually bringing Namor to screen, like, the idea that we're going to get this and it's going to look ridiculous. But, like, Ryan Coogler and his team really made it look, what, like, authentic and menacing, like, as Sean was saying. Like, he's such a great hero character, because even in the comics, he has always been this kind of, you know, anti-hero, like, on the edge of, like, being a superhero who's always at war with the, or not a superhero, but more of a anti-superhero. Like, he's always trying to do his best for his people, but then always at war with and being a villain against like the Fantastic Four, the X-Men and all. And just that, the X-Men, we're actually getting the first introduction of the first Marvel mutant. He's always been considered the first mutant because he was created in the 40s. And here we have him, you know, bring that up, describe how he's a mutant and why he's a mutant. And I think they did a fantastic job with that. They retconned it a little bit to give him a much more original for the screen background, and they did an amazing job. We were talking about this off mic before, where, like, the look of the underwater city, I'm forgetting how to pronounce it right now, but it's supposed to be Atlantis, but they changed it to make it a Mayan city, and it's so much more beautiful and engaging and feels far more real on screen than, say, what was created for the Aquaman movie, where it was just way too CGI, way too and even this is CGI, but like the Aquaman movie just looked fake. This looks like authentic. It felt really great, and he's just such a great character. And they did, and I get what Sean is saying, and he's right. Like, it would have been wonderful to see him take on T'Challa, and Chadwick is missed in that regard. But I think Letitia held her own, as did Queen Ramonda. Like, they were just so great, like, on screen with him and taking on that menace.
Right. So there's about 12 characters in this movie, not counting Anderson Cooper. And I mean, like, 12 characters that you really kind of have to pay attention to. And that's sort of a lot. And so, Sean, if I'm struggling with anything about this movie, it is that it feels a little overstuffed. And I have a theory that I sort of stole from a podcast called The Big Picture, where I think what they had was a script about this crisis where it turns out somebody else has vibranium, you know, and Wakanda isn't necessarily cool with that, but also the Western powers and the U.S. in particular are also not really cool about that. And, a script probably about alliances and stuff like that. And then Chadwick Boseman died and they had to rewrite the script, probably had to beef up Namor's part a little bit. But, you know, after I think maybe one reason this movie is 160 minutes long is it wound up having to do more than it might have set out planning to do. I think the first script was probably their plan, and it would have been maybe an easier movie to make. But now they suddenly had to inject grief and the missingness of T'Challa into this. And I'm wondering how well you think they did at kind of merging those two different ideas.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about what occurred with the script. I think there was Ryan Coogler has talked about he had a different script in mind, and I think it makes perfect sense that they would that would be a perfect way to introduce Namor, is like the exposing vibranium to the world, et cetera, et cetera. I think they did a, as good, again, like I said before, I think they did as good a job as they could. I think that's my biggest issue with the movie, is that like, I'd rather it be one or the other, but I know you can't do one or the other. Like, you can't just not address the fact that Chadwick Boseman has passed, but also T'Challa has passed, considering that like he is like the titular character. So I think I would like, well, I did a thing on my podcast about this, and I kind of wish like they focused more on just like Wakanda's grief. But like, I feel like the biggest issue with this movie for me is that it has to exist within the MCU. So they have to do all this stuff. They have to have Julia Louis-Dreyfus in here for some reason. I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus, one of the best people to ever be on TV. Why is she in this movie? Martin Freeman, why is he in this movie? I mean, I know why he is, because he was in the last movie, but like, and then like, even the Ironheart character works for like the vibranium part of it, but it's like, she's not essential. Like, I feel like I'd rather see a movie about like Wakanda grieving over this figure than I do see a movie about like Shuri going to Howard and joking around with Ironheart. Like, it was weird. But again, I think they did as good a job as they could, but they're kind of being pulled in two different directions, and they had to kind of serve both masters.
Yeah, I think so too. And so, I mean, Tracy, you were saying that this movie's basically enjoyable for you. It was really, really long. So long that you required two different television sets in order to complete this. But say a little bit about the length and just the experience of watching it.
It definitely was long. I feel like, you know, we've talked about this many times on the show, that there are a lot of movies these days that just feel like they need to have a certain length and then add some more to it. But yes, I did watch it on two separate televisions in about three different sittings because it was just that long. I think, you know, they definitely could have trimmed a lot of it. Maybe towards the beginning, maybe, I mean, in all different parts of it, but I feel like the beginning was much slower, just in pace, but also maybe some extraneous things that didn't need to be in there. But overall, I think it worked. I would probably watch it again, although I'd probably still sit there and say this is too dang long. But I think that they did need to marry the two. I agree with Sean that it would have been nice for those who are used to the source material for it to be separated out, maybe a little more authentic to the comics, but I think they were trying to satisfy two audiences, and for me it worked, because I feel like you almost couldn't have one without the other. You can't have the next generation of Black Panther come on unless you are mourning the first. But then again, I don't know what happens in the comics either, so I don't know if Shuri ever becomes a Black Panther.
Right. Well,
spoiler alert, she does.
And that's an interesting point, Helder, that one of the things that Marvel seems to be doing is maybe transforming some of their male icons into women. They did it with Hawkeye, too, in the television show. I mean, obviously, this is before.
Also based in the books.
Yeah. Obviously, this is before I mean, Jeremy Renner is another person who probably is not going to be available to be a superhero for quite some time. But
for different reasons.
For different reasons. But but it was close, I think, to being the same reason. And you know, I mean, I think that's just sort of an interesting thing, right? One of the things about Black Panther is, and I think somebody said this as we were emailing, you think of all the little kids who went to see the first movie and to see Chadwick Boseman and to see a Marvel hero who looked more like them and with whom they could powerfully identify. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for girls, too. And I think the more that they do this, I mean, this movie is dominated by its women. A very good way, and it's maybe part of the transformation of the world of comic books, Helder, that you probably need to have more women in it if you don't want it to be this kind of stereotypical guy thing.
I mean, you know, that goes back to like something Stan Lee talked about a lot, which was wanting to make comic books for the people. Like, he wanted people to be able to see themselves in the books and the characters that he created, and everyone, down to the point of, like, you know, creating She-Hulk, not just because she, you know, partly to keep the trademark on the Hulk name. So there was that, same thing with Captain Marvel. But this is something that just came up in the She-Hulk TV series that they put out, where, you know, they took actual quotes from Twitter trolls that were going like, well, why is Marvel going so woke and being making all these like female versions and giving, you know, all the powers of like the male into the female, blah blah blah. And they really had a good time playing with that and throwing that back in their faces. But it's good to see that happening, and it's something that's been needing to happen. And they're also like, I love this story just as for what Tracy said in the emails, which was, and just now, like the fact that it was such an empowerment for the women of the of Wakanda, and seeing all those great actresses just really do and so much on screen, and with the story that they and script that they were given, like they all just were like so powerful in that. And it's great to see this transition happening and change. So I'm, for one, I'm looking forward to it. I would have liked a little bit more, just like let us really mourn Chadwick. I'm glad that they gave us this versus recasting, which is a horrible thing that was going out there that people wanted to recast because of their feelings for Letitia Wright. But I'm glad like we got the story we did, and the way it played out a little too long, but it still worked.
All right. We're going to have to stop there just because we're in the middle of a pledge. I will say I watched this last night and then I started rewatching it this morning, and I was enjoying it a lot more this morning. I was sort of more relaxed about what was going on. All right. Let's take a little break. We're going to go out with another piece of music from the really wonderful soundtrack of this movie. And then Kat and I are going to come back and see if we can get you interested in supporting the station.
Glove, sun, wave, clip, pole, smoke. They want the drip, they want the glow, they want my soul, they want the way. I keep it clip, I keep it pole. Who with the smoke, who with the fade?
Look, I know you want my bumper, I know you want my thunder. Why the clouds wanna take us under? Why the hell am I in this jungle? I know you want my bumper.
Hello, Kat here. You know what that means. Pledge drive. Here we are trying to get you interested in supporting the station. 1-800-584-2788 is the number to call, or you can go to ctpublic.org/donate. And now this is the last day of the drive. So all donations in general are matched 50%, and new members and sustainers are matched 100%. And this is being made possible by an anonymous longtime donor in North Granby. So if you donate during this hour, your money will go a lot further. And also, the Colin McEnroe Show mug is discounted to $5 a month this hour only. So...
Yes,
it's pretty tempting.
Anyway, yes, I don't know how anyone could possibly resist that temptation.
Right.
And we should also say no roses. We can't do roses anymore.
Yeah, well, we told them Thursday.
Yeah, we warned you. We warned you.
We warned you.
So, yeah, it's 1-800-584-2788, or you go online to ctpublic.org and click the donate button. And I'm really kind of hoping that here in this hour, we can really have an impressive hour of pledging. If you really do like this show and like some of the things that we get into, and yeah, you don't like it, like having it interrupted by pledging. Break, so this is the last time we're going to do that. We keep them as short as we possibly can, but I sort of told the pledge czarina, Lee Newton, we're going to have a big Friday from 1 to 2 on the show hour. So don't make a liar out of me. Call 1-800-584-2788. Pledge what you can. Yeah, and if you want the mug, it's $5 a month. Lots of other things that you can get as well. And just keep in mind, your money's going to go so much further. If you're a regular existing member or something along those lines, I don't know what they're actually called, but your $5 will turn into $7.50. And if you are a new sustaining member, a new member of any kind, I guess, your $5 turns into $10. So if you've been holding back, waiting to accomplish more with your money, now is the time to do this. 1-800-584-2788. That's the number to call. Nice people there. They'll help you. They'll maybe even help you pick out something, you know, to get back from us. Or you can go online. Really easy. ctpublic.org. Click the donate button and you can see a panoply, plethora, a cornucopia of gifts that we could give back to you once you make your pledge. Kat?
Yeah, that's right. And if you go online, too, there's just a form that's really easy to fill out, which I always appreciate. It's very intuitive. And you get to see, you know, all the totes, the mugs, the hats. I think we still have the pint glasses. That's pretty cool. But yeah, we're trying to make this last hour count. And basically, you have to listen to us for this show and then All Things Considered. And then guess what? Pledge is over. So let's like really push through this Friday afternoon. I know a lot of y'all are on your lunch breaks and you're probably overspending money on something that doesn't come to you every day consistently, right? Like a coffee or something like that. So think about, sorry, I'm like brain dead right now. I have been here, I've like lived here this week.
Right.
So anyway, call 1-800-584-2788 or go to ctpublic.org/donate to make a pledge today.
Right. And we will use some of your money to help get a cat the help she needs.
Yes.
Which she's been through a lot during these pledge drives. We ask a lot of her. So, yeah, I think, you know, you get the message. We're not going to string this out any longer than it needs to be. You get the message. You know what you're supposed to do. So do it. And we're going to be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. The FDA has recently approved Zepbound, a new medication for chronic weight management. Dr. Davita Umashankar, Hartford HealthCare's System Medical Director of Medical Weight Loss, tells us more.
Zepbound helps decrease hunger and increase satiety levels. Taking this medication for 72 weeks, people can see at the highest dosage approximately 48 pounds of weight loss. So definitely a powerful drug and another powerful tool that we have to utilize to help individuals who struggle with obesity.
For those ready to explore their medical weight loss options, Dr. Umashankar has advice on the first most important step.
I don't think anyone knows you better than your own primary care physician. So having that conversation whenever you feel ready is so important because these medications are quite powerful and do need to be monitored on a regular basis.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
So this weird thing happens in the zeitgeist sometimes where just something starts to get talked about again. I swear for the last 12 months, roughly, we've been talking about Columbo. Columbo keeps coming up in conversations. And it's not just on the show. I'm just like all over the place. And it's sort of weird, right? And so now the final step has been taken. Poker Face is like Columbo, a how catch 'em. You always know who did it. And it's a question of whether they can be caught or not. In this case, in place of Peter Falk's Columbo, we have Natasha Lyonne as a person called Charlie. You're going to meet her in a clip in just a couple of seconds. This is available right now on Peacock. Maya Rudolph is for some reason an executive producer. So we're going to be talking about Poker Face. So just to make it clear, these are, unlike so much of what's on television these days, these are, for the most part, self-contained plots. You know, there's a little bit of a through line that runs across the series, but not, you know. Anyway, this is directed by Rian Johnson, who directed one of my favorite movies, Brick, and then has done nothing but annoy me ever since. I don't like those Foghorn Leghorn mystery things with Daniel Craig. But let's hear a little bit of Charlie, the protagonist in Poker Face.
Holding an ace of spades. Six of hearts. Ten of spades. You're not reading the cards.
How could I read the cards?
You're reading me. It's not like it's one thing, like my eye twitches or something.
Nah.
It's just a general.
Yeah.
You can just tell.
Just that something is off. That's the best way to describe it. I could just tell.
When anyone is lying. 100% of the time. How can you not see that this is a gift? You've been graced with a gift. If you do not use this, it's criminal. I'm not firing you. I'm giving you an opportunity to work with me. To use your gift. To get very, very rich.
I've been rich.
Yeah? How was it?
Easier than being broke. Harder than doing just fine.
All right. If you recognize the other voice, that's Adrian Brody. He plays this casino owner who's inherited a casino from his father into his casino, working at his casino. It turns out is this person who's kind of famous in the casino world because she has this unusual ability to spot a bluff, unfailingly spot a bluff. He's testing her with those cards, claiming they're one thing, if perhaps they're another, and she is showing exactly how well her BS detector works. This turns into a thing where she's got to take it on the lam, and she goes from place to place, and for some reason or other, everywhere she goes, somebody gets killed. Not an unusual convention in this type of series. So, Tracy Wu Fastenberg, I've been talking too much. Say a little bit about how this is working for you.
So first, I got to say, I didn't watch a whole lot of Columbo. So all of these sort of like alignments that everybody else saw in this, I did not see. I liked it. And I will say that as much as I respect Natasha Lyonne as an actor, I have never actually really enjoyed watching her, but I really enjoyed watching her in this. I feel like she was just the perfect balance of everything in this character. I liked the fact that, you know, you have just a different formula as far as how she gets integrated into things. I really appreciated the fact that in all the characters, there's diversity without making the characters themselves all about their diversity. Right. So you've got Hong Chau, who's Vietnamese, but her character's not Vietnamese. You've got Megan Suri, who's South Asian, but her character's not South Asian. And they integrated it in places that I probably wouldn't expect there to be more than like one or two folks of color, because the places that Natasha Lyonne goes are not very metropolitan. They're kind of podunky also. And I just like the way that things are delivered. It's got something that keeps you captivated. It's got humor. The soundtrack is great. And seeing different stars that you've known your entire life in different kinds of roles, like Judith Light doing her business and saying, "My crevices have crevices," just really tickled me in all the right places.
Right. By the way, just a few weeks ago, we talked about The Menu, in which both Hong Chau and Judith Light appear, which is sort of weird because that's the one that Rian Johnson didn't direct. It's very confusing. And I will also say, Tracy, they kind of I don't know if they knew that Hong Chau was going to really kind of break out. She breaks out big in The Menu. She's got an Oscar nomination now for The Whale. She's really not in that episode enough, although one of the conventions of this kind of series is you get big stars and they could be in the whole thing, or they just could be there for a few minutes, depending on what they're supposed to do.
And it was so fun to see them too, and not all recognize all of them right away either. I didn't recognize Chloe Sevigny right away either.
Yeah, Chloe Sevigny is somebody that I would absolutely recognize under, I think, almost any circumstances. So, Helder, you know, I think another thing about this type of series is you don't have to take it terribly seriously. And it doesn't make sense even to ask the kind of penetrating questions that, say, Marvel nerds might ask about an MCU thing or something like that. I mean, for example, Chloe Sevigny plays the leader of supposedly this kind of metal band. They're supposed to be, you know, something along the lines of metal. Although part of the plot includes them getting this brand new breakout hit that's going to revive their career. And it sounds like it's by Belle and Sebastian or something. It doesn't sound anything like a metal sound, but they're really, really excited about it. But those are the kinds of things you're really not supposed to ask questions about, right? This is just candy that you eat a bag of.
Oh, totally. It's, I mean, much like Columbo, like you're just along for the ride and enjoying it every one more thing that you get. And every raspy little observation she makes about what's going on. Like, she's so great in it. It's great. Plus, I also love like John Darnielle from The yes. Mountain Goats is in that episode in that band. And they're just kind of like the worst band ever. But that's a particular great episode because you get to see what I love about what they've been doing in this show is you get this like little chunk that's very Columbo-esque where you see how the murder unfolds and you get to meet a little bit of the victim along with our killers and how that all interacts, and then boom, flash back to after the murder occurs, we flash back to a day or two before and you see how Charlie comes into the scene and all the, you start picking up little clues and notes along with her and you kind of watch her unravel everything just, you know, like Columbo and Peter Falk would do so well on screen. It's a lot of fun to watch all of that unfold, and it's just it's great that you, after the first episode, everything else kind of like you can just watch as you want. You don't have to watch them all in order to really get it. And I also, again, love the fact that it's kind of this fugitive / Incredible Hulk style, like, you know, different town per week and then watching them sort of get involved in that little space for a moment.
Right. There is a kind of a flashback to lots of other series from the 60s. I'm thinking there was one with Ben Gazzara called Run for Your Life. Is that what it's called? And one with Christopher George called The Untouchables. And even the original David Janssen and The Fugitive, a lot of it was town to town, getting involved in remarkably similar situations in each place. And Sean, another part of this, we've already mentioned a few, you know, fairly decent-sized stars, and there are just a lot of people who have to take Rian Johnson's phone calls, and that turns out to include Ellen Barkin, Luis Guzman, Jamila Jamil from The Good Place, Tim Meadows, Tim Blake Nelson, lots of other people named Tim, Rhea Perlman, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was the star of Brick, Cherry Jones, Nick Nolte, all of those are still to come. And it is sort of fun watching people, you know, do it's sort of it feels like low stakes in some ways. They're just there to entertain us for once. But what was your overall reaction?
Well, I'm going to get to your question. But first, I love Brick just as much as you do. And it hurts me that you don't like Knives Out or anything he's done since Brick. But I'll address the question.
I'm with
you,
Sean.
He's insane. But this is why we love him. I love Rian Johnson using the catapult that Star Wars gave his career to be able to make stuff like this. Like even the Knives Out movies that you don't enjoy, he's like he can get anybody he wants to be on screen, and they love to do it because I think whether or not you like those movies, I think you can at least say that he's trying to have fun with them,
oh,
and
yeah.
That's what I appreciate about his career over the last few years is that he's like. Like, this show doesn't have to be important, and I think that's one of the issues that people have had with, like, Knives Out or Glass Onion is that they're not saying you, Colin, but some people are saying, like, oh, this is not that big a deal. But it's like, I don't think he intends for it to be that big a deal. I think it's that big a deal because he's got the talent around it, and he's got the push, like, from the studio and, like, Netflix to make it a big deal and, like, NBC to make Poker Face a big deal. But I love that he's just able to get, like Lil Rel, just come... be my show, you know what I mean? Whoever I want, just come do this because, like, it's like kind of an old Hollywood thing going on.
Yeah, I think in a way it is a big deal, though. It's a big deal if this works as well as it appears to. You know, it does. It may sort of mean that more money gets steered into this. That you can do it and not have it be highly repetitious, just repetitious enough to be fun and comforting. I think there are people who are maxing out a little bit on trying to keep. Track from week to week on what's going on in Slow Horses and what happened last week and do I need to watch last week's episode again and stuff. There's something very relaxing about this. Television didn't used to be so hard to do, you know, as a watcher. And I feel like the execs all over the business are probably watching this thing right now going, you know, we could be, you know, everything old could become new again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's part of the reason why, like, so many... even as much as like Netflix, HBO Max, whatever stream service you want to name, like makes these big plays for like prestige and all that stuff. Most of what they put out is reality TV or game shows or like, you know, competition shows, baking shows. Cause like that is the stuff it's very like easy to do. And people will eat it up all day. Like I know so many people who just watch this, so many baking shows. I love baking shows. There's too many. It is way too many on every network. Because it's easy and fun. People don't like, I love all the prestige stuff. I love The Last of Us. I love, you name it, you know, I watch them all, but like, yeah, sometimes it's nice to just like turn on the TV and like, not have to like, does this matter? Who's this character going to show up next week? Who's this? I just want to watch something fun.
Right. It's sort of, Tracy, also, I know everybody connected with today's show was trying to figure out how am I going to get on Peacock? Because nobody had it. And it's sort of, I picture Rian Johnson and Natasha Lyonne going into the Peacock offices to pitch it, and there's like a hole in the carpet, you know, and some of the furniture's got kind of nicks and stuff on it. But the truth is, they already have the most watched scripted television show in America with Yellowstone. Paramount Plus made some huge mistake and allowed that to walk across the street away from them. And now they've got this, and I think I just wanted to say to you, Tracy, I'm sort of with you on Lyonne. I tried to watch Russian Doll, and I just... there's something about her level in that I just thought, I can't stay with this. I'm not going to do it. But here, I'm just knocked out by, she's just a really fun hang, right? You just want to hang with Charlie.
Hell yeah. I definitely want to have a beer with her or, you know, one of those froofy cherry alcoholic drinks that she was drinking in one of the episodes. Just sort of shoot the crap with her and just see, you know, just see what comes out of her mouth too, and whatever, go along as an adventure, be the dog. Actually, I kind of want to be the dog and just hang out with her. That is not a spoiler. It's just, there's a really great dog in one of the episodes. But I think that she's more likable and relatable here, even though she still kind of has that hot mess thing that seems to be a part of a lot of her characters, and that sort of brashness. But it was just really enjoyable to watch her and be like, yeah, I could hang out with somebody like that, and I kind of want to.
Yeah, I was actually sorry to see that the dog didn't leave with her. I thought the dog was going to be her sidekick.
Could have been a logistical complication, like in other episodes, but
the dog had other projects it was working on. It was attached. I think it is attached to a future Star Wars movie. So that
it was working on a Paramount thing, and then it had a mustache. You had to shave the mustache to be in this one, but then it was a whole thing.
That's probably actually true. Pants wants you all to know that everything with Columbo, including like some of his, you know, chest X-rays and stuff like that, they're all on Peacock. Everything about Columbo, pilot movies, everything, it's all on Peacock. And this is
his obituary.
I actually went and did a deep dive after the first couple episodes of Poker Face because I needed that fix, and it's just amazing how much it borrows and pays homage, Poker Face does, to the Columbo oeuvre, I guess.
Yeah, although Helder, one thing,
like, they just having all those like great like guest stars that they would have.
Right, the first Columbo had Gene Barry as sort of the guy you knew was guilty all the way through. And the Helder, the one thing I don't want her to do, which she's done, was either in episode 3 or 4, she really started to lapse into an impersonation. A little bit of the head shaking, one more thing, you know, yeah. I got one more thing. I don't want that. I want this to be like Columbo. I want this to remind me of Columbo, but I don't want it to be a Columbo impersonation. Your thoughts?
I also agree. Like, it's great when you can kind of almost tell it's going there, but she holds it back, or like, you know, she doesn't go straight out and do a one more thing, but there's always a little variation. But she's also borrowing a lot from an interview I just heard where she's doing a bit of Elliot Gould as Philip Marlowe in Altman's The Long Goodbye. You know, getting that schlubby kind of detective who's mumbling a little bit and always on edge. I think she's doing a great job of that. And she's borrowing from a great writer, a favorite of mine, John Fante, in that like Bukowski-esque down on her, you know, last nickel type of situation, trying to get by and having to pay back the potential victims that she ends up meeting by working for them, like she does in a few of those.
She also looks great. She looks great in a trucker cap too.
She does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she should borrow one of Judah Friedlander's trucker caps from 30 Rock, and that'll be like another little weird show business callback. All right, we have to stop there because we have to have time to do a whole bunch of other things. But the series is Poker Face. It's on Peacock. You can get Peacock. You'll have fun on Peacock. That's actually their slogan for this season. You'll have fun on Peacock. Seriously, well, you will.
You're listening to the new investigative reporting podcast, In Absentia, which means you're interested in getting to the facts and uncovering the truth. If you'd like to help us continue our investigative work, consider making a donation. Visit ctpublic.org/tapsupport and contribute today. That's ctpublic.org/tapsupport. Thank you for being a part of the Accountability Project.
Join Connecticut Public and Fairfield County's Community Foundation for the In-Community Speaker Series, May 2nd, featuring New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project. Jones will talk about her work covering racial injustice and the legacy of slavery on our culture, our politics, and our institutions. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. at District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets at ctpublic.org/speakerseries.
We are back, and thank you to Kat Pastor, our technical producer, and thanks to Jonathan McPants for producing this particular episode of our panel. I do want to say that Sean Murray, if you're enjoying him today, we plan on having him back next week to talk about The Last of Us, the fungus of zombie series on HBO Max. So it's time for the panel to make some recommendations. Tracy Wu-Fastenberg, why don't you kick things off?
I mean, first, of course, I have to endorse making sure you make your pledge to WNPR during Pledge Drive. But I'm going to recommend Ginny in Georgia on Netflix. It's in season two, and don't judge it by its name. But it is kind of a great show that seems rooted in teenagerhood, but it's much deeper than that. It deals with a lot of complex issues in really poignant and appropriate ways while still having moments of humor. And season one was fun. I think season two kind of really finds a depth that it didn't have in season one. And it may not appeal to everyone, but if you like anything that has to do with parenting, mother-child relationships, or even murder mystery type of things, it's a good time.
All right, Sean Murray, you have the conch shell.
I would like to recommend, first, since I'm going to talk about The Last of Us next week, The Last of Us video game is maybe the best video game anyone's ever played. Certainly one of my favorites. Just play that. PlayStation. And then also Colson Whitehead's first novel I've read that very recently called The Intuitionist. It's about an elevator inspector. And it sounds very boring. And it's actually one of the most creative books I've read in a long time. So check that out.
All right. And Helder Mira, recommend a thing or two to us.
So one of the things I'm going to recommend is the first film by Charles Burnett from 1977. It's Killer of Sheep. It's going to be showing at Cine Studio here in Hartford, but it's also available online. It's beautifully shot in black and white. It examines the black Los Angeles ghetto of Watts in the mid-70s through the eyes of Stan, a sensitive dreamer who is growing detached and numb from the psychic toll of working at a slaughterhouse. It's a beautiful little, like, poem of this period in history there in Watts, and it just beautifully shot and told by Charles Burnett, who does not get enough accolades for the work that he's done in film. So highly recommend that. And then keeping with Black Panther, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Roxane Gay both put out some really great series of the Black Panther, where you get the Wakanda Forever title from, and you get a few of the characters that show up in the movie appeared first in those two series. So I recommend those.
All right. I will actually recommend The Long Goodbye, the Robert Altman version, which stars Elliot Gould, has an amazing Jim Boughton cameo in it, and has like Nina Van Pallant and who else, Sterling Hayden and people like that. It's really terrific in a very Altman-y LA kind of way. I also want to say, if you're listening to us on Friday, it's a very, very cold day today, and it's going to be even colder tomorrow. And I do want to really sort of, first of all, endorse bundling up. But I kind of endorse going out. Like, you know, my dog and I, we went to the top of a hill where there's an incredible wind a couple of hours ago. I can't tell you where it is because it's the only other place they have vibranium. It's actually the third vibranium site in America. But we went there, and I had glove liners on, and then heavy gloves and sock liners and socks and, you know, I mean, thermal underwear and stuff. And it's wonderful just to be out in the breeze and the sun, and it's crazy weather and it's really cold. But if you do it right, you wear the right hat and layer up and stuff like that, you know, have the experience. You live in New England, you know, there's no point in not confronting it. So I endorse going outside if you are properly dressed. All right, we got to say goodbye, although Kat and I are coming back in just a couple of seconds here to see if we can get you interested in pledging during our hour.
Talk about everything as a matter of talk about Torrington, Vernon, Danbury, Waterbury, Oliveberry, Woodbury, hitting on New Britain, Vernon, I already said that one, Avon, Farmington.
Yeah. I can't believe some people don't have Peacock. That's crazy to me. They have every season of Below Deck on there. You gotta get it.
That's the Star Trek thing, right? Though, but the sort of
no. This is about the people who work on yachts.
Oh, okay,
living in close quarters, but lots of sexy singles working on yachts.
There is a Star Trek thing with a name kind of like that, though, right?
Yeah, I think it's called Star Trek Below Deck. Okay. I don't know. You'd have to ask Mercy Quay.
Right. So, I also want to say that I didn't say it during the discussion because I don't know what it would mean. But actually, the Natasha Lyonne character in some very good ways reminds me of you. You know.
Ooh.
It was sort of a little bit like what I would picture. I've never hung out with you, but I think it sort of would be like hanging out with you or hanging out with Charlie would be kind of similar. So I think you're going to like a Poker Face.
Yeah, no, I've definitely been thinking about watching it. So, yeah, All right. Knows. All right. Back to business.
Yeah. 1-800-584-2788. That's business. I'm trying to have us have a really good hour here. I don't know why. To impress management. I don't know. Some needy part of me wants to do this.
No, I do too. It's really weird.
So 1-800-584-2788. That's the number to call. Make a pledge. As we're telling you, a wonderful anonymous donor in North Granby has made it possible for us to double your pledge if you are a new member, a new sustainer, whatever, or to enhance your pledge by 50% if you are just pledging once again. But either way, your money's going to go a lot further. This is the very, very tail end of our pledge drive, and we're hoping you'll jump in and do something for us. Kat?
Yeah, that's right. So as Colin said, you could call 1-800-584-2788, where I've heard there's nice people on the other end of the line to assist you with that, but I can't be sure because I don't like calling. I'm not a big caller. So what I would do is go on ctpublic.org/donate, and there you can see like a comprehensive list of the thank you gifts that we have, which, you know, hats, totes, mugs, and a lot more, actually. So go check that out. You could either be a one-time donor or monthly sustainer, which means that the money is just taken out of your bank account every month, off your credit card every month, whatever, whichever way pleases you. And then we know that we can rely on that money. So it's really good for us. So again, 1-800-584-2788 or ctpublic.org/donate.
Kat's too busy solving murders at truck stops and among hard rock band participants in order to, and she can't be waiting on the phone and talking to people. Although you don't have to wait. They'll talk to you right away. They're wonderful people. 1-800-584-2788. And yes, the Colin McEnroe Show mug, if that's a thing you feel like you want in your life, it is available for a little bit less than usual. It's, I think, usually a $6 a month pledge. Now it's a $5 a month pledge.
That's right. The sale doesn't come around often. So exactly. Definitely
this
take advantage of that.
Strike while the iron is hot, or the mug in this case is hot.
Yep.
So it's 1-800-584-2788. 1-800-584-2788. Or go online to ctpublic.org. We thank everybody.